thank you for listening again to Boomchuk, a Drummer's Podcast. I have a very special guest today. He is a platinum-selling recording artist for the band Blue October. He is also the drummer for a band called Harvard of the South. He is actually making drums now, first drums. You can find all this stuff on Instagram. If you just Google his name, he will pop up. My dear, dear friend, I've known him for a long time. We've did a couple tours together, spent some time on the road together. Mr. Jeremy Furstenfeld.
How y'all been, man?
Man, we're hanging in there. That's How good. About you?
Same, playing some drums, yeah. You know, trying to play every day. And, You know, except Saturdays and Sundays. But, you know, we have our shed where we store. It's like an industrial warehouse area.
Yeah.
Kind of out in the boonies outside of San Marcos.
Yeah.
And so we store all our gear there, but it's like 750 square feet. So I have plenty of room. I have a full.
Oh, yeah. You got plenty.
I have like 14 lines of tracking set up for drums right now.
And you have your brother's house, right? You can go to up down and
yeah, but they're
you have
always
a kit there too.
Yeah, I can. I actually have two kits over there, and they have a vintage Ludwig over there as well. Which I don't really care for the kick drum, but the toms are amazing on
really?
That kit. Yes, they are amazing. And my guy Charlie, you met Charlie before, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I met Charlie.
He hooked up the toms like real nice.
That's awesome.
And then we put a bunch of like cotton and stuff inside the lugs on the kick drum, but it still has, I mean, it's a cool punchy little sound, but it has this strange ring to it, and it sounds like springs, you know, because they have those springs inside of the lugs
right.
on those old ones. But
right.
I mean, we jammed them full of cotton and
it still is ringing out.
Yeah. I mean, it rings a little bit. They like it, but they, you know, they're always layering stuff with other samples and like, your actual kick drum sound might actually be this big,
right?
When everything
right.
else is like, you know,
it's crazy.
I think that's called sound design. Is that what it's called?
yeah, sound sampling. Sound. That's funny too, because like I've talked to a few drummers. Like some people are totally against it.
Yeah.
So others are kind of like, yeah, no, it is what it is. You know, blah blah blah. But I'm like, I mean, I'd rather. I'm the weirdo that would rather have my drums sound that way, and the mic
right.
just pick it up.
Right.
So
well, you know, I mean, I think for certain things, I'm like drums only. You know, let's get the best sound we can out of this. And then for other things that require it, you know, more poppy stuff, it's kind of
right.
it's kind of what you have to do nowadays. And it's kind of the I don't know. It's kind of the standard now. You know, like
right.
I think everybody's just trying to make everything sound so different because, I mean. Everything's been done before, really, you know?
Know.
Like, all the
I
sounds,
know.
You know, so you just try to get as far out there as you can. And I'm cool with that. I'm cool with experimenting. But right now, man, my kit is, like, just going into the box sounds amazing. Like, it sounds at the shed. And it sounds, and I'm using my hybrid maple and, you know, switching out snares and things like that. But most of the time, the recording custom stainless steel snare drum, the 7x14, and that thing's a monster, dude.
Oh yeah, dude, totally. So and you went down in sizes, right? When you got that kit, I remember talking to you about it, and you used to play 14, 16, 18
yes.
toms, right?
Yes.
And the 24-inch kick. What is the new one?
The
12.
It's still a 24-inch kick, but it's 24x14. It's the shallower,
oh, yeah.
the shallowest one they have, which I really dig. It took some getting used to, just mostly from the feel of the pedal. You know what I mean?
So I got a 22, but a shorty.
Yeah.
I kind of like it.
Sometimes a shorty's good. You know what I mean?
I know.
But yeah,
well,
man.
Well, then that's the thing. I was going to say, my buddy made, I posted up a 24x9.
Right.
And it's like crazy boomy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, no, I love that. I'm building one right now, actually, that's like out of an old kit. It's a 22x10. I think,
okay, yeah.
And I had to go 10. I wanted to go 11 or 12, but I had to go 10 to get beyond all the this whole kit had like holes for toms drilled in it. And, you know, to get past the lugs where I didn't have any more lug holes that I had to plug. So I ended up going with 10.
So you started, and I see I got to name, I got to drop the names, I got to do all this stuff, right? Because this is a podcast. So you started First Drums.
First Drums, F-U-R-S-T.
That's right. So
How, like, what are you doing? Because you're using old shells and doing it. Are you getting new shells?
Man,
I mean, you're not making your own, right?
Right now, I'm not making my own shells. The first snare I made, I bought a shell. It's a Keller shell, mahogany and poplar. That was the first one I did, and I had it, all the bearing edges and snare bed cut on it.
Yeah.
And, man, it was really kind of a pain in the butt because the place I was getting it from, I'm not going to say who they are, but they were just, they said they had all this experience doing it, and I got it back, and, like, I did the trick, you know, where you shine a light in it while it's on a flat surface, and it was just,
right,
like, light coming from both sides. And I'm not just talking about the snare bed, you know. He's like,
right,
well, those are snare beds. I was like, dude, I've been playing drums for I can't tell you how long, and I know what a snare bed is, and where I'm seeing the light is not the snare bed, and it's on the it's on the batter side too. So anyway, so I had him do that, and when I got it back again, it was a beautiful drum. It turned out great. I put chrome over brass, triple flange hoops on it.
Nice.
Triple flange. I put the George Way beer tap throw on it.
Nice.
Just because I wanted to put as little holes in it as possible.
Well, yeah, for sure. And you started, you made that. Was that the one you made because you just didn't have anything that size? You wanted something like that?
Like, I didn't have any mahogany drums. So I was like, you know, I really want to get into this and just give it a shot. And all the mahogany drums I've seen, they're beautiful. Like, just,
yeah.
So that's just an oil on the outside that I rubbed on, like 5 coats
oh, nice.
Of oil. And you can really see it's like a ribbon mahogany, and it's just,
yeah.
And I did the inside too. So, I mean, it's the inside, I think, looks better than the outside, but
that's crazy.
But yeah, the other thing I built was this 16 inch snare drum.
Yeah.
And it's basically, when I shortened everything on that kit that I'm rebuilding,
yeah,
I had 4 inches of floor tom left.
That's what it came out of.
And
that's
it came
crazy.
Off the floor tom. And this is it here. And man, this thing, this is the one I did everything on. I mean, I cut the shell. I kind of tried to make it look like a driftwood finish.
Yeah.
I just used a Gibraltar piccolo throw because I didn't want it sticking up, you know, high.
Yeah, that
the
makes
thing.
Sense.
And those are just regular triple flange hoops. They're not brass or anything.
Right.
But I put a G12 head on that thing. And this snare I made basically to go goosh. I mean, we've used it on a few things. The Blue October Girl That Stole My Heart thing we did for Christmas, we used that on. And it, I mean, I was blown away by it. And we used it on another song that didn't make the last record called The Boxer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll send you a clip of that I made a little video with just the drums. And
That'd be awesome.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. But yeah, man, right now I'm making a kit out of an old kit, you know, but I plan to, and I really wanted to kind of cut my teeth on something that, you know, I don't want to buy a bunch of beautiful new shells, you know, because I mean, I've got maple drums already, so I don't want to make any maple drums,
right.
You know, and I'm probably just start making snares after this because I've found that, you know, once you start doing a whole kit, There's
crazy,
lots.
Right?
So you got to match the stain, you know, like.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll get there, but I just want to work on some snares. I think the next thing I build will probably be a walnut snare.
Oh, that'd be cool. Nice.
And I'm probably not going to buy any more Keller shells, I don't think.
Just because they're hard to work with.
Man,
whatever,
I had to fill some holes and stuff in the ply, like with with toothpicks and glue and just fill it. And like one of them took a whole toothpick. Like. It went
what?
It went all the way down, and then I was like, man. And my buddy Charlie, my drum tech, he's a CNC guy, and he's like, man, they used to get Keller shells, and they had to do that all the time. They were always putting toothpicks in them to fill little tiny holes in the ply. And I was just like, man. So I think they're getting their shells from a place called Nordic Shell Company.
Yeah.
And these guys are making some serious quality drums or quality shells.
Yeah. Yeah, though I've seen a few of the stuff that they're coming up with in like different layers and stuff like that. It's freaking crazy.
Yeah, and that's a company that a lot of people are just buying their plies from. You know, their veneers, and you know, that's who CNC's buying their stuff from now. And a few other companies, you know, they go in and pick their plies. And you know, like I think Charlie's is a maple gum or something like that.
Oh, weird. That's cool.
Man, and it's a and it's only a six lug kit all the way around. Like the kick drum, the toms, everything is only six lugs. And it's wow. It's wicked. I mean,
it still has the control with six lugs and like tuning control and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he doesn't have a snare for it. He just has the kit, a little three piece, I think, 13 by 9, a 22 by 12,
mm-hmm.
and a 16 by 15, I think, or maybe 16 okay. by 14.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that'll be my next move is getting on some once I do all my messing up on this old kit.
Right, right.
You know, yeah, and right. I it's taken me a long time because I'm really trying hard not to screw it up. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I haven't had to, like, completely redo anything yet. So, you know, and luckily there's been some guys online on Instagram that do what I do on a small scale, but they've been doing it for mm-hmm. years, and they've been super helpful. You know, I'll message them and ask a question.
Yeah.
And they'll just send me all this information. It's like, you know, you've got hours and hours and hours to go before you get this down. I'm like, I know, but I gotta start somewhere.
Or just sanding. Like, I found, like, just taking a fine grit sandpaper and just going to town. You think it's so good, and they're like, oh no, that was one of like 15 rounds of sanding they gotta do to make it smooth. And I'm just like,
you like sand it, do your thing, then you're like, oh, like the other day I was starting to stain the kit. The floor tom and the 12 inch, and I was like, the other day I thought I'd finished sanding them, and I got them out there, and I built these like rollers that I could, like roll the tom on and just do it.
Yeah.
And I was rubbing my hand on it as I was rolling, and I was like, oh shit, I gotta sand it some more.
Yeah, dude.
You know, so there were a couple sections where I had to get back down to 120, and then 220, and then 320 was really my final because. I mean, that wood's not really, it's crappy mahogany and crappy poplar.
Right.
Like Luan mahogany that they used to make all the old kits out of. And so it's very grainy, and real long grains and a lot of space in between it. So sometimes when you're sanding it, you end up underneath the grain and a piece is coming off. So there you go, sand some more. You know? Yeah. So
one of our sound guys had a kit. It was a Mapex Venus or something, whatever, and he toured for a while in this band, and he was like, I don't like the green whatever, so he took that off, left all the glue on, and then him and his buddy took furniture stain and stained the shells like a deep, like rich, like whatever brown.
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh, I hate, like, it doesn't play anymore. He was like, I hate my drums, I hate the way they look, blah blah. I was like, oh, let's start sanding it. Started sanding it. It was so thick and dense, dude. I couldn't even get it off, so I just took the hand sander and just sat there, like, forever. And I've gone through probably 15 to 20, like, actual sandpaper things with the hand sander.
Yeah.
And it's a mess.
And what you're doing,
because
that stain soaks into that really not-so-great wood, so, I mean, because it's so open and porous, that you're sanding the first layer of veneer off, you know? It's like... So, I don't know. I mean, it's a good way to learn, and that's kind of why I use those drums. This was my first kit that I ever had with Blue October, and it was, it's an early 80s, pretty crappy Pearl set. I mean, it sounded all right, you know, but, I mean, had the metal hoops on the tick drum. And
Yeah,
you know, the big chrome. So, I still haven't decided if I'm going to put the cash into replacing those or not yet. I probably will, just to say that. Because it's going to be completely different. And the bearing edges that I'm doing, and I did on the 16, are like a full round over with no inner cut.
Nice.
Very similar to the old Gretsch edges.
Yeah. So that'll change the sound of that kit for
sure. Oh, it's going to change the sound. I mean, it had little 45s and a point, you know, and that's fine. I mean, our hybrid maples have the real sharp edges, and I mean, but that's Yamaha for you, though. I mean, Yamaha makes some of the best drums I've ever played. I mean, you and me both.
Yeah, they can do whatever they want. Yeah.
We've probably had backline kits of almost everything, you know, and I'm always, like, so happy when I get the Yamaha.
Yeah.
I'm so happy when I get an old recording custom. Because those things.
An old one, yeah.
Yeah, they do have the slight round over with the 30-degree inside edge.
Have you played the new ones, though? The ones they launched like 2 years ago?
Man, already? I played them when they right before they first came out at the showroom. I was up visiting Greg while we were in LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had this big giant like Bonham kit, and it was a recording custom.
Was it black?
It was black. Did you play that one?
I played the same one. Yeah,
dude,
yeah.
And it was a monster, and I loved it. I was like, man.
Yeah, Daryl was there. He was like, can I play this kit and tell me what you think about it? Didn't tell me what it was. Uh-huh. And then he told me after. I'm like, wait a minute. What is this? So then it came out, and I was like, I'm still waiting, man. I'm like, oh, I
one of
to
these,
justify that cost to my wife.
Yeah, one of these days I want one of those. You have the wood snare, though, right? The recording custom?
I have the brass.
Oh, you have the brass snare.
I have the 13, 6.5 brass. I've played – our church has the 18, like the 14x8.
Recording
one.
Is that the turquoise one or teal?
Yeah, dude, it's freaking. That is, I want that snare so bad.
Yeah, I kind of.
But I'm a weirdo. If I get the snare, I want that. I want the.
Oh yeah, it's got to match. So and that color's great too.
Yeah,
especially with the, like kind of the wood colored hoops on the kick drum. You know, it looks very classy and stuff. But
yeah,
Man. So I'm just here playing drums.
Obviously, you mentioned. You have a couple bands, right? So obviously Blue October, you're a founding member. This is your band. And then Harvard of the South, right?
Yes, sir.
So that's
also
you and writer and drummer extraordinaire, right? So
yeah,
and
man.
Obviously, so Blue October was that your first band ever?
Yeah.
So, and it just kind of...
Actually, that was the first really time I'd ever played drums, to be honest with you.
So that was one of my questions, right? So, like, I like kind of digging into, obviously, this is all drum stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So how did you start? Like what was the first time that you were like, I have to play drums? And everyone's story is different, right?
So,
So what was the whole thing?
So right after high school, man, in high school I was a big jock. I mean, no music class, no whatever. I went to college not knowing what in the world I wanted to do. Like, I had no idea. And because of that, I mean, I had loads of fun at college, like too much fun, so much fun. They were like,
right.
Sir, will you please leave college?
Yeah, you need to leave. Yes. Yeah.
So
I understand that.
So I went back home, you know, tucked my tail between my legs and went home. And Justin was kind of starting an early rendition of Blue October with Ryan and our then bassist, Liz Mullally. And they rehearsed at her house and kind of just jammed, you know. And I would go over there and hang out and drink beer and, you know, just sit and listen, kind of groove along, just standing there, you know. And she had everything. She had a bass. She had guitar. She had a drum kit. And her drum kit was like a Pearl, but it was a Pearl Export with MDF shells.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Classic kit.
Yeah.
So Justin was like, man, I know you have rhythm. And you've seen our cousin play drums, and he played drums and... Mm-hmm. In high school in the band a little bit, you know, percussion stuff. He's like, sit back there and see what happens.
And that's how it started.
And they started playing this song called Libby. Libby, I'm Listening. And I started playing the beat to... Actually, it wasn't Libby, I'm Listening. It was a different song. I started playing the beat to a Toady song. Boom, boom, pat, ba-doom, doom, pat.
Yeah.
And Justin was
Possum Kingdom.
Yeah. Is that the one? Yeah, I don't remember the name of it. And Justin was like, oh shit, man, you could play drums. I was like, and I was just on the hi-hat and the kick drum and the snare.
Right.
You know, I didn't do anything silly. And he was like, after a few songs of playing around, you know, we were having some beer and whatever else.
Sure.
Having fun.
Right.
And he was like, all right, man, well, we got a gig in 3 weeks. I was like,
holy crap.
Oh, whoa,
boy.
Great.
I have to figure this stuff out. Yeah. That's funny.
So, I mean, luckily, all of our songs, like starting out with Blue October, was always meant to be. I was perfect for the gig because Justin didn't want any Carter Beaufords in there. He didn't want somebody that wasn't. He wanted. I mean, he was into at the time to the Red House Painters and Idaho.
Okay.
And I mean, really, their grooves are ride cymbal, kick, and snare. And it's like, doom, doom, ka, doom, 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 ka.
Right.
Real slow and like depressing, you know? But I mean,
right.
That's how we started out. And, You know, I had actually getting kicked out of college was the best thing that ever happened to me because I actually found out what I wanted to do.
Right.
You know, I just had to have this awakening.
Yeah.
And I was led there.
And then from that point forward, it just was, I mean, eventually you guys hopped in the van and
yeah, like we started, hopped in the van and 95 is when we started and we hopped in the van and, 90, we made a record in 97.
Nice.
Called The Answers. And, they were like, oh, you're going to play to this thing called a click track. And I was like, oh, what?
Yeah. Excuse me.
What is this? You mean? That was difficult at first, because normally I just followed the guitar and all the delays, you know, because the delays are usually in time.
Right.
That didn't necessarily mean that I was in time.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. What you hear? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I might be behind or probably ahead, which is even more scary. Right. You know. So. But then we made The Answers, and then from that we found a manager like a year later, and then we signed with Universal Records after they came to see us at this little tiny place here in San Marcos called Cafe on the Square.
Oh, okay.
Which was like a breakfast restaurant.
Nice.
That they'd move all the chairs out and, you know, and sell beer, and now they're a concert venue.
There you go. Why not?
But, so, man, they found us. The next thing you know, we were in pre-production for like a year with this producer named Blue Miller, who became like a mentor to all of us. You know, like I remember sitting at SIR in Nashville. We spent a summer in Nashville pre-producing this record, and we had this JBL 215 with a 2-inch tweeter next to me. They're like, all right, you're gonna get this click thing down. Cowbell through the giant JBL. Everybody else go home. Me and Jeremy are gonna stay here. And man,
what?
Guess what, dude? I got it.
But that's what it took, is the giant cowbell. Probably lost a bunch of hearing.
Well, I don't know, huh?
Yeah, exactly. That's crazy.
Actually,
that's a funny story.
I still hear pretty well. I mean, we didn't switch to ears to in-ear monitors till 2006 or so, 2007.
Really? Is that late?
So I was always big giant monitors, big giant subs, and, you know, just turn it up.
Oh, yeah. I remember when we toured. Well, that's when Chris and I started, and then I started singing, that changed everything because I had to hear. I was just going to go for it and be wrong.
Right.
But, like, when we toured together, I did one click in one ear and the wedge in the other ear.
Right.
And by the end of however 40 something shows, I was jacked. My equilibrium was off.
Dude.
My head was all.
You were walking in circles, bro.
It was weird. Like, I remember in New Orleans, it was like the last US show. I remember this like it was yesterday. The monitor guy was back here. I had the click and I just looked at Chris because the wedge was like farting out because I kept going up, up, and he just wasn't EQing anything.
Right.
And he just started cranking his guitar. I'm like, I just wanted my vocal. So I ended up flipping the wedge towards your drum set. Like, I just flipped it over.
I remember that. I remember when you pushed it.
And I
away.
Just kind of looked at Chris and went, and just started
here we
playing.
Go.
Yeah. We haven't done this in a while. I mean, it ended up being fine, but it was like, after that many shows, you kind of just
went. You're already on autopilot.
But after, I mean, no joke, we a few in Europe, and then we came home, and I bought a pack just to be like, all right,
yeah,
I can't do this anymore. I have to be in ears, especially if we're clicking everything. Mm-hmm. I can't not. And it's a game changer for sure.
Oh, completely.
Especially when you're clicking with us, because now all the guys in the band have click or just you?
Everybody wants click.
Okay, that's good.
So everybody has click. Everybody knows when the song starts. So I'm not always having to be making a bunch of noise on the hi-hat or clicking sticks together.
Right.
I mean, there's still a few.
I hate that.
There's still a few that we do, mm-hmm. but there's still a few that the guys rely on me to do that.
Yeah.
Mostly Justin, because he has the least amount of click, I think.
And like, I've heard, I don't know if this is true for every singer or whatever, but like, it takes away the feel. I'm like, no. what you call feel, we call be on beat. But
right, you know, I mean, to me, it's a guide, and yeah, when you have that click track, you can still have the feel. You're just going to be on tempo when you have feel. You know, right. You're not going to be like, feel isn't dragging everybody down,
right?
Or speeding everybody up. You know, that was always my thing when we weren't on a click was, man, it's like click, 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 zoom, and then we're off to the races.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, once you get into it and your adrenaline starts going, everybody rushes.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, I've listened to a few, like, things of ours on YouTube where, like, a fan or somebody put it on YouTube from shows back at Foiled. And I was just like, what the were we doing, man? What was I doing? Like, as soon as I came in, everybody started hauling ass.
And that's when you, like, I mean, Foiled, that's, you guys were in it. Like, that was, like, the big album, and I mean, that was, like...
That was the big album with the number ones and everything. Big shows and big tours and, you know, headlining.
Isn't it weird
small arenas
to think you...
And,
yeah, you made it that far, and you look back on videos now, and you go, what were we doing? And you were already, like,
dude, we were
skyrocketing.
Just drinking, really. It was...
Well, right. That's why you're speeding up.
I mean, I really wasn't drinking before shows, but it was just, like... We didn't really take it serious enough, I don't think. You know, like...
Sure.
We were just having fun, and that was great and all good and stuff. But when I look back, I wish we would have taken it more serious. But at the time, there were people that were having way more problems than I knew about.
Right.
With drugs and things like that, you know. And I was
right.
I was pretty much just drinking most of the time. And, you know, it would start out with, like, a little pregame shot. You know, everybody would do a pregame shot. And by the end of the tour... And I think the Foo Fighters said this too on one of their documentaries. By the end of the tour, it's not one pregame shot to loosen you up. It's like five pregame shots before.
At least.
And then you're just twisted when you go on stage. And it's just like.
Yeah, when you're dealing with nerves and all that stuff, like it's hard to put a stop to it and put a cap against it.
Dude,
you know
it was
like,
it was easy, actually. It's like,
well,
back and listen to yourself play after that. And you're
oh,
well, that's done.
Yeah, it was easy to do that, but it's like when you're in that moment, it's kind of like, I'll be fine.
Yeah,
I'll have two or three beers.
You know,
yeah,
your tolerance
whatever.
Had been worked up so much. Now you're on five shots to do what the one was doing.
Exactly.
So it wasn't a good situation. Kids, I don't recommend it.
No, I definitely don't recommend it.
No.
We have stories.
Be serious.
Like, you more than me.
Be serious about your playing, and you know, don't let that crap get in the way, because it will definitely get in the way. For sure.
Right. No, yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, and as this developed, Harvard of the South, how did that come about when you guys kind of, the quote-unquote side project, right, when you just kind of had songs that piled up?
Man,
or...
it was kind of it was on purpose. It was, we actually met Steve, and during Any Man in America, we finally got Long Wave to tour with us. Long Wave was a band that we were playing in the van for years. We were using one of their instrumental songs as an intro track. I mean, we were just like, that was my favorite band, still is my favorite band. But we were just always trying to get Long Wave on tour. Get Long Wave on tour. Paul, they don't want to go on tour. They don't want to go on tour. They don't want to go on tour. And finally, one day, they came.
Yeah.
But it was their last tour. It was like they were breaking up. And they had just put out this fantastic album called Secrets Are Sinister, and I mean it's ridiculously good, and their guitarist had already quit, so there was like a new guitarist for the last the last tour. But anyway, me and Steve really hit it off on that tour, and everybody called Steve my boyfriend, because I was always hanging out. I want to hang out in our dressing room. I'm going to Long Wave's dressing room, and they were always playing acoustic and having sing-alongs and stuff. They were just fun people. So Steve and I kept in touch after that tour, and he started a different band called Hurricane Bells. We had them out with us a few times. And then he would just come see us in New York. And after a show one time at Webster Hall, we were sitting across the street. He's like, man, we should, like, me and Justin should get together, and we should play. We should write. We should do stuff. And come to find out, you know, it took a little while, but we finally got the nuts off to be like, hey, come down. And he brought all of his crazy guitar pedals and his, you know, guitar. And I had this little Digi 002 system at my house.
Oh, yeah.
And my house had like these huge, at the time, had these huge tall ceilings. Small house, big tall ceilings. So we just set up in the living room and just started jamming. And Justin was supposed to be there, but it was turning out to be like the pinnacle of Justin's using days.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he would never show up. We'd call him. He'd never show up, never show up. And so we were like, okay, well, we're just going to do this by ourselves. And that's fine, you know, whatever. And we just wrote music, you know. He'd start playing some chords. I'd start playing a beat, and you know, he'd hum a little melody or something. And then, you know, after the first session for about a week, we had a song a day, pretty much.
Yeah,
we had 5 songs, and then I showed up to Matt, and Matt was like, "Dude, I want to do this." He's like, "This is great." I mean, it was all rough stuff. Our songs were called Hit number 1, Hit number 2.
But there were
13 by the end.
Nice.
That was just music.
Nice. That's awesome.
And, you know, we were tripping all over hits all over the house, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
for sure.
And then finally, you know, we canceled a time because we were going to put Justin in rehab.
Yeah.
And he was like, I think I know what's going on. And so, I mean, we started up again, but Justin was out of rehab, and we were like, hey, man, you know, we still want you to come if you still want to do it. He was like, yeah. So, like, our last session, Justin came down and hung out a little bit, did some vocals and stuff, because most of the songs were done already, except just the music bed. And then we had Steve come down one more time, and in, like, 2 or 3 days, Justin and Steve wrote all the lyrics to the entire album except for Miracle, which Steve had already written.
Yeah, wow.
And they had just gotten Up Down, and so we did all the vocals there. But yeah, the whole thing was like produced and recorded by Steve and I, and then Steve mixed the whole thing at his studio.
Yeah.
And it's a very rough-sounding album, very indie-sounding album, but we really liked the way it sounded. I mean, it's definitely got the sound of that house in it.
But that's like the most important thing. If you like the way it sounded and the stuff that you created is what you wanted it to be.
Oh, and there's bleed all over everything.
Oh, really?
You know, because we had a guitar crazy. In the closet right there off the living room where we were. But I mean, he cranks his shit up to 11, man. I mean, and he's like, there's no stopping this sound coming out of this closet with the door shut and towels and pillows and stuff against the door. You know, so I mean, it was guitar and the drums, but
still,
you know, the bass we were able to keep out. We put the cabinet in the garage and then did a direct line as well.
Oh, nice.
And then, you know, I mean, it took us forever we put out an EP, and then finally, thanks to 2020, we were like not touring. We were always like, what's a good time to put the Hots record out? And Justin's like, anytime. It's like, if you're waiting for a break from Blue October, there's never going to be a break. You know, because we're going
to... Now is the break, right?
Yeah. So in 2020, man, me and Steve put our heads together and, you know, got it all out finally at the end of 2020. I think it came out on December 11th.
Yeah, just very recent. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's something we're really proud of. I mean, I hope that we get to do that again. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know if we will, but, I mean, he's got 2 kids. I've got 2 kids. Justin's got 3 kids. Matt's got 3 kids. So when we're not touring, man, we're pretty busy.
You don't have to tell me, man.
Saving our wives from, you know, I'm about to kill everybody if you don't get home tour.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
I know exactly how that goes. And my tours were smaller than yours, and it was more like when we'd have to go out and we were busy.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we did a thing, I forgot, I think it was end of 18, maybe end of 17. And we would just either fly out or one of us, because I lived in North Carolina and Chris lived in Michigan, and we'd either meet and just do little tours, like 4 or 5 days, come home.
Right.
And my wife was like, you are screwing up my,
the
my
autonomy.
Program. Yeah. I'd rather have you go out for 2 or 3 months and then come back and give me 2 or 3 months. Like, and I was like, okay. And then, this all hit, and I became a stay-at-home 7th grade math teacher. It's been awesome.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's funny. Steve lives in Brooklyn, and we used to call him old school because I mean, he was really into like just organic sounds, organic pedals, not really doing sampling and stuff. And that's kind of the whole Hots record is like that.
Yeah.
So I just started calling him old school. And now his wife is a doctor, so she has to work. Now we just call him homeschool.
Nice. That's funny. I mean, Chris and I have been writing. I mean, the whole, obviously he lives down here now. We've been writing all the time. And it's like, because we're home so much, it's kind of like it turns into, hey, we have this song. Nah, that song's not going to cut it. And instead of just throwing it away and starting fresh, nah, we got to make this song good.
Well, that's good.
So like, yeah, I mean, we have, it started with, we got three. We had two, then it was three, and now all of a sudden it's like, well, now we're on seven, so we might as well just get an album out of this, you know, this pandemic.
Dude,
or whatever.
You should, man. You should use the time if you have it.
Oh, yeah, and that's, I mean, shoot. That's why I started the podcast, because just like,
right.
If I can get a little break every now and then, talk to my friends and talk drums.
That's right. That's right.
We would have done it anyway. Like, might as well record it and send it out there with people, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's cool. I didn't realize that record when you did it was mostly done at your house, quick, kind of not piecemealed, but like in separate times and like all this stuff. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it was
cool.
Like three different sessions for the music part.
Yeah.
And then one small session for the vocals, and the vocals were the only thing we did not record. At my
right.
house, we recorded them in the booth at Up Down.
That's awesome.
A real quality microphone.
Yeah, right. Nah.
I mean, we had, you know, 57s, and I think my top. We just did. What did we do for overheads? Oh, we did the Glenn Johns thing for the. Like, there are no close mics. There's a snare and a kick, and then a Glenn Johns thing with a couple of Shure's dynamics. And
you didn't do over, you didn't like close mic your toms or anything at all?
There's one song that I did an overdub for, and I did it up in a bedroom that was more controlled.
Yeah.
And that one is called Before We Start. That one's that one has full kit mics, but no like ride mic or hi-hat mics or anything like
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
Who wants to turn the hi-hat up louder?
I've never mic'd my hi-hat. I'm not a fan of a bottom snare mic. Yeah. I think the bottom snare mic is like the dumbest thing ever.
I like it sometimes. It just depends on the snare drum.
Yeah, it depends on the snare drum.
Yeah.
And none of my snare drums like it.
But I learned a trick about that. If you're just using one mic on the top of your snare drum, turn your snare drum to where the microphone is over the wires. So like,
oh yeah.
And so like
sense.
if your microphone is coming down here, just kick your snare drum sideways. So it's basically closer to the wires.
Yeah.
And it works.
Totally makes sense.
I tried it out. It works for real. So
see, a good tip for people home recording or whatever.
There you go.
I remember when we were down in Texas and Eric put like a NT1 air or whatever underneath, and I'm like, that's seriously? You're gonna crank that? And
it's like a tube mic, right? Underneath the
And I'm like, what are you doing? Uh-huh. Just put a 57 on there and call it give me the warmth of the overheads. But I like things super dry.
Right.
I'm different. There are times, and obviously some of this new stuff, I do want it wide open and big room and all this kind of stuff. But like that last album, it was like, nope. Give me all the pillowcases, all the towels. I have 15 moon gels on my snare drum. I think one time I put a newspaper on my snare drum and
that's
just
great.
Was shredding paper at Orb.
Oh, those sound great. It sounds sometimes I'll tape a piece of paper to the top head. And so you got the tape and the paper, and it's like a really good sound. You don't lose any attack, but you lose all the ring.
Yeah.
So it's good.
I
see
it.
You're
I
using the big fat snare drums a lot.
Yeah, so the funny thing is I got into them just because it does kill a lot of it. And, you know, just for practicing sake, I actually started because when I was teaching, I mean, I would just end the day with a headache after two or three lessons. And like all these kids, I'm like, I need to kill these things a little bit. So I got a couple different sizes and I'd put them on the toms, whatever. And I'm like, then it was like, I went to NAMM and I was talking to the guy and I was like, oh, you guys have like suede heads and like all this, and I'm like, oh yeah, and I started getting all kinds, and no joke, the kit I teach on, which is my tour, like the live custom, it's covered in, they're called quesadillas.
Yeah,
it's,
I know what you're talking about,
whatever, dude, those things. And I started like recording with them it's like mm-hmm. kind of changing the game. Like that's a little good. Bit is like, that's awesome. Oh shoot. Yeah. So I like them because it kills it, but doesn't it, it actually makes it a fat snare drum. It doesn't actually kill the sound quality of it. Like right. with when you put paper and stuff on it, it starts doing that. But I don't know. I love them. You should get a couple.
I have same. One. I have one of the,
do you?
Well, I have one of the big fat snare drums with the jingles on top, the one with the four oh, little yeah. tambo things. I love that thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it just adds awesome. A whole new texture to think. I played Only Loss Is Found off of the new Blue October record with that
uh-huh.
on the top. And that was like, I think Justin and Eric were out on tour, and I just took my drums and my personal UA rack mm-hmm. into up down and just set up my, so I didn't have to be walking back and forth to the controller.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, yeah. you know, I played a lot of that, ended up on the record, you know.
That's awesome.
And that was a mono overhead.
Really?
Yeah, I like, that's I have crazy. This, we have a lot of warm mics, like WARM,
yeah.
and I have a few of their preamps as well, but I have their warm WA-47.
Okay.
It's like a U-47 knockoff, kind of.
Right.
And I love that thing on overheads or on room, and that thing as a mono overhead, like right in the center, is just awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's
fun. I love nerding out about, like, I could do this. I literally putting out a song on a major record with random weird things like newspapers or one overhead, because like you walk in any studio setting, everyone just sets up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my two room mics. Here's a mic in the hallway. Here's, you know, 20 feet up, close mic. Like, it's too much sometimes. It's kind of nice when it's just straight up like.
But you have those options, you know. You don't have to use everything yeah. that you recorded at one time, but you can right. record them at one time and then pick and choose.
Right. No, for sure.
Which is something I loved. But I just recently got a piece of gear back from Up Down that I had been loaning them for a while, and it's a UA-4710D. Are you familiar with that? It's basically four preamps. And each preamp has a little compressor on it and kind of a 1176 style compressor. And it has inserts on the back for each channel if you want to add something. It also has four other inputs on it where you can add four other preamps. So now it becomes an eight.
Yeah.
And it goes light pipe into the back of the, what do I have, a Apollo 8.
Really?
Uh-huh. And so I got four on the Apollo, then eight on there because I have the warm WA-412, which is like an mm-hmm. API kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And that goes into the UA, the back of that. Then I have two other Neve knockoffs that go into the back of that four-channel thing I was telling you about. So
yeah.
it's like now I have, when I was doing that stuff at Justin's house, I only had eight channels.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I got that piece of gear back from Justin, I was like, oh, now I have six wait more channels and I have room for two more. But nice. Now that I'm not working, it's like, you right. can't go buy another preamp.
No joke. Yeah.
So
yeah, when things show up on the porch, my wife is like, oh, what did you sell? And I go,
yeah.
I mean, what am I going to sell, you mean?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
That's funny. Well, yeah, since we're talking about gear, let's run through all the gear that you, like, you have endorsements or the gear that you play. Like, obviously, Yamaha drums.
Man, live.
You've been with them a long time.
Yeah, I play Yamaha. I've been with them since 2005, I guess.
And I do, since I have you face-to-face, you are the reason that I have a Yamaha endorsement.
Hey, excellent.
I am totally thankful for you and, like, just introducing me to Greg and doing all that.
Dude,
like,
Greg is such a super good guy. I mean, he's such a sweetheart. Yeah. And everybody at Yamaha is really, everybody that I've ever met.
Everybody.
The fact that you get do you get the Christmas card from Japan every year?
Yeah.
With all the like guys who actually build the drums or like signatures and stuff and all the Japanese guys. I'm just like, man, it's really a family. And
it is. Yeah.
You know, I'm, like I was saying earlier about backline kits and stuff, like Yamaha is truly the best sounding and most durable kit that I've found. Especially hardware is top notch beyond anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, man, I play the Hybrid Maple kit. We were talking about it earlier, but I didn't get to it. Now it's a 24x14, a 13x9.
Oh, yeah.
A 14x13. and a 16 by 15, or my toms.
So you go 13 rack and 14 first floor.
Basically what it did, I can still get the depth out of them, but it tightened up that sound a little bit. It's not as floppy as my 14, 16, 18.
Yeah.
So I can still get all the low end I want out of that 14, 13. And I think a lot of it has to do with it being 13 instead of 14, 14, being like a square, you know. But and then I have the hybrid maple for snare two, I guess, which I think that might be one of my number one snares, man. It's most versatile snare I think I own. It'll do anything.
Yeah.
And then the and that one's cranked. I mean, it is cranked.
Is
and, nice. But on that one also I have a little contact microphone that I run into into a little pedal board that has like guitar pedals.
Yeah.
And I have a TS9 tube screamer on that, and the and the Ryan Adams I don't know what it's called now because they changed it after he got in all that trouble, but it's a JHS and it's got a distortion, a phaser and a really nice hall reverb. So I'll use that hall reverb most of the time with the distortion from the TS9. And I'm able to turn that. It stays on all the time, and then they just mute it on and off at front of house.
Right.
But that gives me a little bit of like a crunch or a texture on that side snare for certain things.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't know you did that.
Yeah, yeah.
You haven't done that. I mean, this is
in the last.
You didn't do that back in the day.
Few years, I would say.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and then I'm running the DTX Multi 12.
Yep.
I use all the pads on it. And then I have a trigger on the snare for songs that we have like special snare treatments that we want to sound just like that snare. Right. So we'll layer it in. And then I have a trigger on the kick drum for the same reason, to have the acoustic sound and the special affected sound.
And those are going through your DTX,
are going through the DTX. Yeah. And then we're sending that out just mono to front of house. So he can blend that with the actual acoustic sound.
Yep.
And then there's another pad on the right between the two toms that I can hit with my hand. And then I play Sabian cymbals, 15-inch HHX hats. I've been playing a lot of, lately I've got a 16-inch set of Artisan Elites that I can't play live because they're really quiet and really dry, and you just can't turn up the hi-hat loud enough without picking everything else up. But
recording,
I used them a lot on this last record. Namely, one is called The Weatherman. I used them on that song. I also have a 26-inch Artisan Elite Ride that I don't use live because of the same thing. Super dry. Like, if you try to crash it, it goes... Psh!
Nice. I love that, though, man.
It's super dry and super dark.
Yeah.
And then just some Artisan... crashes that are a little brighter, like a 22 inch on the right side. I've been doing a lot of big cymbals lately.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
A 22 on my right crash, a 20 inch HHX explosion crash on my left. And then I have a China, and I forget if it's an HHX or what it is, but it's a 22 inch China that has a raw center and it has a buttload of rivets around it.
Really?
I think it's the Crescent line.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's the Crescent line from Sabian.
Yeah.
And it's really a jazz cymbal. A lot of those guys will use them for rides and stuff.
Right.
But, man, it's cool. That's really a cool... I'm not a huge China fan, but when I can get them to be affected or something like that, and that's what rivets do, it kind of gives it a little jingle when you hit it or a little sizzle. Porter and Davies Thrones.
Okay.
With the little thumper in the bottom, and those things are a lifesaver, along with JH Audio ears.
Yeah, okay.
And Warm Audio microphones. And we use those live on overheads.
Oh, okay.
They're like a 414, a vintage 414 knockoff.
Yeah.
They're great. They're awesome. They'd be good on anything.
And that's if you're touring with them. So, I mean, they're obviously pretty durable, so... That's cool.
We were touring with real 414s, and somebody dropped one, and you know those things aren't cheap, and You know, now we're down to one 414.
Oh, man. That's awful.
So we, you know, that's when we found Warm, and yeah. And they're here in Austin.
Yeah.
So it works out perfectly. I mean, they're making some killer stuff. They have a U67 now.
Jeez.
Or a WA67.
Right.
An 87. The 251 tube mic, the WA47. They have that, and then they have like Neve 1073
wow.
knockoffs. I mean, you should look at their line. It's really something, and it all
yeah.
sounds great. It all sounds great. I mean, and it's not ridiculous prices either. Even, you know, like the regular street prices, you're like,
yeah, right.
Really?
To get
know,
a mod,
it's good.
A mic that's gonna sound like the mic that cost me hundreds and thousands of dollars. Yeah, like,
yeah. I mean, you can't find a U47 for less than $10,000.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, I think these are like $750 or $899.
Yeah,
or
that's
something.
Not bad at all. Like to get that, right?
And it's a quality tube mic.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm
with Cinemag, I think it has Cinemag transformers. So I mean, they use good stuff.
Yeah.
That's they use
cool.
all good stuff.
That's cool. Probably. Well, heads and sticks. What about
oh,
heads
and Evans.
Sticks?
Evans. Evans drum heads. On the toms, it's G2s on top and G1s on the bottom.
Yeah.
On the snare one, main snare, the stainless steel one, is a G14.
Okay.
Which is a 14 millimeter single ply head,
mm-hmm.
which is super loud, but also a lot more controlled than like a G2
right.
or something.
Right.
I felt like if I put the G2 on it, that it would kill some of the sound.
Yeah.
But the G14 is thick enough to survive the punishment that I
right.
that I give to it live.
Right.
And I can do three or four shows with one. And I mean, live, I really hit way too hard.
Right.
It's a totally different thing if I'm in the studio playing.
Right.
Or if I'm live, it's a totally opposite situation. You know, in the studio, I'm hitting, you know, hard enough to make the sound, but not beating the crap out of it. And
right.
live, man, I really beat the crap out of it. But the good thing is that stainless steel recording custom, it takes it and it keeps going.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't choke out
yeah.
when you're hitting it too hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, and ProMark sticks, I play 5A's with a wood tip.
Okay.
Just basic
straight
things.
5A.
Some hot rods on a few things.
Live. You're playing hot rods live.
Just on I Hope You're Happy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And actually, I play hot rod in one hand and a 5A in another hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, the time is kept on the snare.
Right.
Like, I think it was actually played like a train beat, like...
Oh, right.
In the background, but I just play it like...
Yeah.
On the side of the snare with, like, a homemade big fat snare drum that I cut off of a G2. I just took one of the plies.
Yeah, yeah.
And laid it on top of the head.
Which, I mean, essentially, it's like a mute math, like Darren King style. Like, you just flip that head over and, yeah.
Yeah,
it works.
But I take the rim off
mm-hmm.
of the head because I don't want to hit it.
Well, yeah, right. Of course.
And I had a lot of... I was doing that at first, just flipping them over. And then I kept hitting the head or hitting the rim, the
oh,
metal
yeah.
part. And you'd hear it click.
Yeah, yeah.
Click,
and the whole
click.
Thing does this. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So now it just settles nice in between the rim
yeah.
or the hoop and... it works. I don't use it on every song, but all the songs I needed to go splat.
Yeah, right. That's what it does.
Splats.
That's awesome.
And then most of the rest of the time, I just use like one moon jail, about an inch and a half from the top of the hoop.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't kill it completely, but it still kills a lot of the overtone.
Are you still playing? Last time I saw you, you had, it was at Index Drums, right? It's like almost like an old Ribbon Crasher.
The hard hat.
The hard hat. Okay.
I have that and I still play it, but I don't play it live anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I got a tiny little set of hi-hats. They're like 6 inches.
What? Really?
And they're cut from old hi-hats.
Okay.
And what is the name of that company?
Oh, is it Mod Cymbals or whatever you were telling me about?
It's the company that Mod Cymbals came from.
Yeah, yeah. They're in Winston-Salem, like an hour and a half from me. So
yeah
we talked about that, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. So I use those now and they...
Okay.
They take up less space and
yeah.
they're in the same spot as the hard hat, but
okay.
I can get pretty much the same sound out of them.
So you have it like when you so that's essentially underneath your ride, right? Is do you have it boomed?
Kind of right in the middle. It's boomed towards me a little bit.
Is it coming out of your bass room? Like how's it?
Yeah.
Okay. So you just use
the mount. I got it. Yeah, I just used the mount that came on the bass
oh,
drum,
yeah.
and I cut a boom arm because, like, the shorty was too short.
Yeah.
And the long one, I just didn't want, like, the other piece sticking way
sticking
out.
Sticking thing, yeah.
So I cut it.
Nice.
But other than that, man, Yamaha kick pedal, not the new one, not the new blue one. I want to get into that thing. I think you have that
I have
one,
the
don't
single,
you?
Yeah. It's, I mean, obviously it's not going anywhere, but yeah, it's awesome, man. It's like, it's fluid.
Right. It's really smooth from what
yeah.
I hear.
But you know, funny thing is, for the guys that play live all the time, it's perfect for studio because it's very smooth. But the guys play live all the time, I like kind of the beefiness. I almost like that resistance and that beefiness of the FP9 just because it's
right.
It's almost like I have to make it hit that drum, and it makes me
right.
feel better. And again, everyone's different, but like that smooth, it's almost too smooth. You know what I mean?
Right.
Is that can happen? Like I play it. Like,
right.
I mean, everything we do over here, like every recording or whatever, I play that. Like it's like it stays
right.
on my foot, and there's no, I mean, there's like no screeching or any. Obviously, most of the Yamaha stuff doesn't do that, but like I have an old Flying Dragon that every time I lift my foot up, you hear like it kind
of
squeaks.
Man, you know, a couple of my Yamaha ones have done that, but after years,
yeah,
of-
yeah.
of abuse, and I play my kick drum like I play my snare drum,
yeah.
And it, you know, I mean, I went through before I got with Yamaha, I tried out every company,
yeah.
Pearl, Power Shifter or whatever that
yep.
was. I broke the foot plate.
Really?
Iron Cobra. I had like three or four of those. Broke every one of the foot plates.
Seriously?
Yes.
Wow.
And the DW ones. I would break that hinge, man.
Hinge
all the
time.
I don't know if they
yeah.
make it to break or what, but I hated that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I haven't had any problems like that with the Yamaha stuff
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
So it always works. It may make a little bit of noise sometimes, but it works.
You know what? You squirt it with a little lube and it goes away. A little WD-40.
That's right.
All
That's
of
right.
this, we've kind of talked about everything, whatever. I did write on here. So you guys, Blue October has their own... Like, it's called getbackup.tv, right? So that website, and again, when the documentary came out, stuff like that, like, I actually still haven't seen it yet. But
right.
When we toured, it was kind of, that was happening, right? Like, there was things that
yeah.
were, I mean, I remember playing the last song with you, and things were just, there was times where it was like, are we playing the last song? It's like, everyone's kind of
yeah.
looking around. But that
yeah,
like
man.
Yeah yeah and then finally it was like yeah let's go play the last song. It's like okay and I
right,
okay
right.
But so that debuted there, it kind of went out and it's there, and then I looked, obviously researching to talk to you, I looked, like everything Blue October or video wise music wise is there, right? So how did that come
yeah.
about? Do you even know? Like,
man, it came about out of not wanting to share the profits with these other streaming companies.
Yeah, makes sense.
You know, there's Patreon. You guys are on Patreon.
Yeah.
There's Icarus Bell's on Patreon. A lot of people are on Patreon. But, I mean, and we're wanting to do these live streams as well. Mm-hmm. And when you do the live streams, you know, that company has to come to you and
right.
all this stuff.
Right.
And we didn't want any limits. You know, I think on what was the one that – stage it.
Yeah,
or
we did a couple
there's
stage
a limit.
Shows. Yeah,
there's a limit to the people that can come there. I mean, it's a lot of people,
right.
but we don't want any limits. But we also don't want to give anybody 20% of
yeah
what we're
yeah.
doing.
That's true. You're working hard to
so
do it.
We,
so
we developed. I mean, it cost us some money, but we developed our own streaming platform.
Yeah.
Like you just said, getbackup.tv, and I mean, there's all sorts of stuff on there. Everything Blue October is on
yeah.
there.
Are you going to open it up, or is it just going to stay? Obviously, Get Back Up TV, that's a Blue October thing, right? The whole Get Back Up thing. But, like, with Harvard of the South stuff or whatever,
no.
it's always just going to be Blue October.
It's Blue October.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to do some interviews here pretty soon with each one of the band members that like, showcase things that we're doing right now, like, that's not Blue October,
right.
like First Drums.
Right.
I'll talk about Harvard of the South and stuff, but, like, we won't. Like try to promote the record through
right.
that or anything like that. Although Justin and I did a New Year's Eve show, just him and I on getbackup.tv, and we played Miracle and Running from Harvard of the South, and you know, a buttload of Blue October right. songs. But I mean, we had to fill up a lot of space.
I mean, yeah, you played for like 3 hours, didn't you?
The it was show like was 2.5 or 3 hours.
Freaking crazy.
Yeah, it was, I mean, fun. Yeah.
It was fun. It acoustic? Yeah. Like, did you play like a small yes. kit and stuff? Or?
I played my Yamaha Hip.
Oh yeah.
And that was great. That was the first time I played it like in a recording situation, yeah, yeah. and it worked out great. I think the toms are really good sounding toms. Yeah. I mean, it's a Birch kit, yeah. and it's the finish is insanely gorgeous.
What color did you get?
And I got the I think it's called Raven, but it looks like piano black.
Oh, wow.
But it's really a super black stain.
Oh yeah.
You can barely see the wood grain through
it. Oh, cool.
But then there's a high gloss clear over the yeah. top. And what I really like about that kit is the kick drum. Mm-hmm. I think it's 20 by 8.
Is it that thin? Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's 20 by 8. And then the snare drum, the 13 by 5, I think, or 13 mm-hmm. by 6, mm-hmm. it sings.
Really?
And it's a little 6-lug snare drum, and it really that's sings. Awesome. So, yeah, I mean, I love that little kit. I have it set up at my shed as well.
Yeah.
And I'll go over and play that and record it awesome. And play the big kit. And it's cool.
Did you get a pack? Have you tried the Crosstown hardware yet? The light hardware?
No, I didn't. I've seen yours.
Dude, it's a game changer. I mean, yeah. you're of the upper echelon. You don't haul your gear around too much. You know what I mean? Like, you get them in the cases and they're, you know, somebody else puts them.
Yeah.
But like, it's, I mean... My hardware like box, like my Humes and Berg thing, that weighed 127 pounds.
Oh my God.
But because it was like I had an extra stand just in case. I had four or five boom stands. And then but I had the 845, so the big double brace stuff. Put my bass pedal mm-hmm. in there, put all the throne, put everything in there. And then the case itself weighed a significant amount just
of course,
to
yeah.
you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was heavy and awkward, and then I got that stuff, and that case weighs more than my hardware. Ooh. The whole thing weighs about 45 pounds.
Wow. Yeah. Man, that's amazing.
And it's like everything. And it's, dude, it saves any movement. It's just like, oh, I'm going to pick this thing up. But everything, dude, I beat the crap out of my, like out on the ride or whatever. That stand doesn't move at all.
That's
it's
awesome.
Crazy.
That's awesome.
So... You
that's
should
great.
See if you can snag yourself a pair. It's
maybe I'll
for
get
that
into those
kit,
one day.
Just for moving stuff like quick. It's
that'd
it's
be
so
good for
awesome.
That little kit.
But anyway,
sure. I mean, on that little kit, I only use a hi-hat stand and a ride stand. I don't really use a crash or anything like that. And I'll put like my 22
yeah,
inch crash on there.
Simple.
That way, it can be a ride and a crash at the same time.
But, yeah.
Yeah, dude. Yamaha all the way,
that's
baby.
Right. Well, hey, man. I appreciate you. You know. Coming
hey,
on and talking
you,
to me. It's good to see you.
Hey, I have a question for
oh,
you.
Oh, okay.
And it's about I Am Dynamite. And it's something that I always thought should have happened.
Okay.
Y'all have a song, O-E-O.
Yes.
O-E-O. You know
I know exactly
about?
What you're talking about.
You know what I'm going to say?
I don't know what you're going to say.
Okay, good. Because I always felt like somebody, maybe your manager or anyone like that,
should have sold it to Oreo.
Should have shopped that song to Oreos, dude.
Hey,
it would have been. It's so catchy.
It'd have changed the game for us, but
it would have changed the game.
They
sure.
still can't. It's still out there. We don't ever play that song.
It's still out
we
there.
We don't ever play that song. It's on the retired list,
dude. It's such a great song. I listen to that record a lot. Like it's a. I've been going to the beach a lot lately,
yeah.
and it's on my beach playlist. And the other, what's the second record y'all did
Wauwatosa?
Too? That you did, yeah. That
so
one.
You get
dude.
You listen to the first record, going to the beach. You spend all day at the beach, and then on your way home, when the sun is setting, you put on Wauwatosa. That's the
dude,
whole. Point.
I love it. I love both of them. I love both of those records.
Thanks,
but
man.
You got to get with somebody at Oreos, dude. I mean, there's still time. There's still
time. The problem
time.
Is they probably listen to it, and then when it gets to the part where it's like, woke up this morning, grabbed my gun, told my mom what I had done, they're probably like, no, okay, I can't do that.
No, but you just got to send them like, redo it and make it all
or
about
just don't,
Oreo.
Yeah, just say Oreo. I mean, yeah, that would change the game for us for sure. But, you know, hey.
Yeah, I'd be like, Oreo,
yeah.
Oreo. And I was in the shower a while ago, And I was like coming up with these like actual lyrics, and I can't remember them right now, but it was like something about, I got a glass of milk.
Oh my gosh.
So, da, 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 and I dip my cookies in. You know? You just got to come up with that version.
I mean, it's going to be a hard sell on my bandmate, but I'm all about it. I'm all about selling out and doing whatever. Because it's like.
Commercialize.
Dude, seriously. I'm all about every sync, every whatever. And it's going to be like, I'll set up my drums and play and do all this stuff and sing Oreo. Absolutely, I will. Give me that check.
Yeah, and like, your front head. Yeah, exactly. Your front head could have a huge Oreo on
that
it.
That would be. I should just do that anyway. You know, like the front head should just be an Oreo.
You go. Now you're already going that direction. And start posting it online.
Ooh, okay.
YouTube.
I'm just gonna start this. Like, I'll post this.
I mean,
we'll start
it. You sing on the record too. You got a good voice, so you just need to do
the whole
yourself.
Thing.
If he's not down, dude. Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, man. But yeah, dude. Thank you so much, man. It's good to see you for sure.
Yeah, it's good seeing you too, man. Tell the family I said hello.
You too, man. Thank you guys for listening to Boom Chuck, a Drummer's Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Boom Chuck and on Facebook at Boom Chuck, a Drummer's Podcast. Again, thank you to Jeremy. You can reach out to him and see the drums that he's working on at first_drums. That's FURST_drums on Instagram. His bands, Harvard of the South and Blue October, are also on Instagram. You just search for those bands and they'll pop right up. Thank you guys again for listening. Again, this is Boom Chuck, the Drummer's Podcast. I'm Chris Phillips. I'll see you next time.
Into the floor.